everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. I'm Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we talk about SmackDown with Sondra. Hey Sondra, how's Enrique been doing?
Enrique's been doing great. You know, he's very remorseful about all the events that went down on New Year's, but
yep.
Did you finally listen to it?
Yeah, finally listened to it.
Because I could tell you hadn't listened to it when David was making all these references that you were just like, nope, don't understand.
But I do have the laptop back now.
Oh, excellent.
Didn't lose anything, which is great. So no thanks to Enrique Lee. or whatever you want to call him. How are you today, though, Sondra?
I'm doing okay. You know, it's weirdly warm in Michigan today, which is strange because it's been, like, super, super cold, and now it's, I don't know, not, and it's supposed to be freezing again, so we're going to have lots of ice, and then maybe, you know, driving will be terrible soon. But right now, it's raining, but it's, like, 50 degrees, and I'm okay with it.
There you go. Now, you don't really get to talk about this a lot, but obviously Raw 25 coming up. A lot of people are talking about it. Now, is that just like a show for you that you're like, it's older people coming back and that's not really my thing? Or are you strangely into it? How are you feeling about Raw 25?
I genuinely don't care. Okay, so I have to watch DX on Retro Raw. Why would I want to watch DX now? I have to watch the New Age Outlaws on Retro Raw. Why would I want to watch the New Age Outlaws now? I watched the Dudley Boys when they came back and were super boring. Why would I want to watch them again? There's nothing that really appeals to me. I mean, no, The Undertaker's coming back. Great. So excited about that. I mean, like, I know that you're super excited, and it'll be fun for you to be in the Manhattan Center, and I'm sure it'll be cool and nostalgic for people, but it's fine. Like, I'll probably watch it.
I do wonder for newer fans how it's going to be. I actually watched back recently the Raw 1000. And I actually think they did a pretty good job with that show overall. Because they had, like, you know, CM Punk turning heel and stuff like that. So there was, like, storyline stuff. But it'll be curious to see how they do this time around with a big nostalgia fest. Did you hear the Observer WrestleMania stuff today?
No, I haven't heard anything.
Okay, not going to be happy.
Oh, great. What's going to happen?
The top two matches for WrestleMania are scheduled to be Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, which you and David spoke about at length, and John Cena versus The Undertaker. That is the match.
I mean, that's what we all expected, right? That's what I've been dreading.
What I'm curious about, though, is that because I hadn't really watched Roman Reigns and The Undertaker back since WrestleMania, and I watched it back yesterday for the first time, and the match was better than I remembered it being. But then
it wasn't terrible. I remember being in the stadium and saying, like, that was, you know, for an old man who can't move and shouldn't be wrestling anymore. It was
okay, yeah.
Not the worst.
But I'm curious because it's one of those things of, like, Undertaker's not had the greatest run of storytelling in the last couple of years.
And then, understatement of the year, yeah.
And then John Cena's had, like, one of his worst years. The bar's pretty low on what the expectations are. But,
The nice part about it is that if it's John Cena and The Undertaker, then it can just be separate from everything else because John Cena doesn't exist in the world of WWE right now. When he comes back to just be like, hey, I'm John Cena and I'm on this show, but I'm not actually going to be a part of the show, right? He just sort of shows up, does something and leaves again, just like The Undertaker. So it really is just an exhibition that's separate from everything else on the show. It's not going to... I mean, I'd even give this one a pass for not really having much of a story and just being John Cena versus The Undertaker because that's what people want to see, right? Like, no one's really getting behind John Cena as this underdog going up against The Undertaker. It's just, I never thought we'd see these two wrestle. They're going to wrestle. It's probably not going to be very good, but it's going to happen. And I guess we'll see. I hope that they surprise me. I hope they pull out a better match than I'm expecting, but...
It's like, I guess, like, if anybody was to sit there and go, Goldberg versus Lesnar, you'd be like, oh my god. But you actually enjoyed it, so I guess...
Oh, I fucking loved it. So, and again, if they pull something out like that, where it actually does get interesting and it, you know, kind of draws me in, and then they end up pulling something off, awesome. That's even better, because then... If my expectations are low, I might enjoy it more.
Yeah, exactly. But so apparently that's the two headline matches. I guess
if he could just be on a motorcycle, I would forgive so much.
To be fair, if he came out to American Badass or Roland, I'd be pretty happy. But anyway, so I guess we'll see. So, you know, somebody had actually pointed out, and I never realized this. See, at the end when he has the because again, I hadn't watched it on TV, so I hadn't seen the close-ups. But like at the end when he has the jacket and the hat on, mm-hmm. and he takes the hat off, he like exhales, like really obviously, like kind of like, thank fuck that's done. Like,
oh really?
So yeah, I'm surprised. I to come back and do one more, because I don't think the Roman one was the best send-off to do as a match. Not like it, like you were saying, it wasn't a terrible match, but...
And you think John Cena is going to be a better match?
I think it could be a better story. Because I don't think Roman Reigns and Undertaker was a very good story. It was...
No, it was all about being a dog in a yard and whose yard it was.
I eliminated you from the Royal Rumble. Now that,
and I want to have a yard.
Yeah, and we're having a yard fight, so...
Yeah.
So, I mean, the bar is set. The bar is very low on a story that's better than that. Then again, they could surprise us.
I think that you're giving them a lot of credit if you're expecting them to tell a better story with The Undertaker and John Cena, who have had, like you said, a terrible rash of storytelling lately.
They have. But I guess we'll see. So Raw 25 is in just 10
I just hope
days.
That they play it out on Raw and not on SmackDown. If all the John Cena Undertaker stuff can just be on Raw... Great. Keep it over there.
I do wonder, though, because I guess the main SmackDown stories going at WrestleMania are going to be Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn against Shane and whatever, and AJ Styles and whoever he's defending the title against.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I don't know. I know you and I think differently. I would like SmackDown to have a big match at WrestleMania. That would be my preference, but I don't know. I guess it all depends who AJ's facing, you know?
Yeah.
So, we'll see. Anyway, so let's talk about SmackDown this week. So, we opened the show with AJ Styles. He comes out. It's a weird thing where Renee's interviewing him, and there's, like, chairs. Like, it's Miz TV or something.
It did look exactly like the Miz TV set. I think Miz even tweeted that. He tweeted at Renee, like, is that my set?
Yeah, it was very strange. And AJ has to do this promo. And the promo's really long, and he kind of feels like he gets lost in it. Mm-hmm. Like, he's avoiding a question that Renee's asked him about, you know, the controversy from Daniel Bryan.
What was it that she kept asking?
Is it fair that you're in this handicap match? Is it fair? And then he kind of just kept not answering it. And then he said that he didn't want to pretend to know what Daniel Bryan's thinking. Then he called it unfair. But then he basically said he didn't want to denounce Daniel Bryan. And it went on for a bit. But I just think AJ is a guy that you give... long promo segments too. It's just not his bag.
I think you can if the story's good, but the story here is just so muddled. Like, well, everyone's unlikable.
When he was doing the stuff in the summer of 2016 on promos with Cena, it was really good. But
yeah,
again,
I think that's the problem here is that none of this story makes sense at all. Like, now it's just gotten to the point, and we'll talk about it a little bit more when Shane and Daniel Bryan start doing what they do, but nobody's likable here. Like, it's except for maybe AJ Styles, but AJ Styles just kind of feels like the least important person in his own story, and he's the champion, and that's kind of frustrating to me.
Yep, it's frustrating. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn come out though to interrupt. They talk about how they're going to be the first ever co-WWE champions. I guess it's kind of, if they win, they're both the champion.
Can they split the belt in half like Lay Cool?
You're the only person that says that as a positive. Everybody else is like, oh god, like that fucking Lakeville thing. And then anyway, so in the end, Shane comes out to interrupt and books Owens and Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens against Nakamura, Randy Orton, AJ Styles in a handicap match, and says that he stands by his general manager. And then Brian and Shane kind of meet backstage and they're shaking hands and Brian congratulates him on the main event. And yeah, I mean, it's continuing to be weird. I just don't really know what the payoff's going to be to it. What did you think of the opening segment as a whole?
I mean, like you said, the promo went on a little bit too long. I think AJ Styles is perfectly fine at delivering promos. I just think that this story not making sense does not help him deliver a promo with any sort of feeling or emotion, because he probably doesn't really know what the payoff is or where it's going. I'm wondering if WWE knows what the payoff is and where it's going, because I call that into question at this point. It doesn't seem like there really is one. And It's, I mean, I like Kevin and Sammy interrupting and being dickheads. Of course I do. Shane McMahon interrupting and saying, oh, well, I'm going to give you a taste of what AJ is going to face and put you in a handicap match against Randy Orton, Shinsuke Nakamura, and AJ Styles. It's like, that's not really the same thing, because at least in the handicap match in the main event, Kevin and Sammy can still tag in and out. Like, it's 2-on-3, but they can still tag in and out. AJ Styles is not going to have that luxury at the Royal Rumble against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. He's going to be in there all by himself without any sort of reprieve. So it's still really not all that even in terms of Shane wanting to get, you know, one up on Kevin and Sammy this time. Plus, it just screams of him just being vindictive against Kevin and Sammy. And then I think also my other problem with the main event is that we've seen this combination of guys just so many times. And I don't understand why Randy Orton and Shinsuke Nakamura are just kind of guys that go against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn now, like, because that's all they do.
Yep. I mean, the whole thing is, like, I don't really think Owens and Zayn are particularly... I'm not compelled by Owens and Zayn as co-champions. It doesn't compel me if they get it or if they don't. So I think that's kind of the problem with the story.
Right, because it's not Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus AJ Styles. It's Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus Shane McMahon. And AJ Styles just happens to be the champion. And I think Kevin and Sammy aren't even necessarily saying that they want to be the champion so badly. That's not. It doesn't seem like that's what this is about. And I think that's a problem.
Yeah, and I think post-Royal Rumble it should get better, because then you can kind of separate the stories again, where AJ can go and do his own thing and Sammy and Kevin can do the thing with Shane. It's funny, I heard a theory the other day, but maybe they think that Brian is going to be able to wrestle, and that's why we're not really going any further forward, because we're waiting to see if he can.
I mean, that'd be ideal. If it led to something great, then I'll put up with months of, or not months, I guess, it hasn't been going on for, well, yeah, it has been kind of going on for months, this whole dissension thing. But I don't want to hold out hope for it. I don't want to hold out hope for it, because if I start getting my hopes up for that, then I'll just be disappointed when it doesn't happen. Yeah.
Up next, we got Becky Lynch coming out against Ruby Riott. I have to tell you something, Sandra, that I need to admit. I fucking hate the Riott Squad. I wish they would all go away. I don't like any of them. I hate Ruby right now. I used to like her. I can't stand her. She's shite. They're all shite.
I mean,
they're all terrible.
She's not.
They're all terrible characters. They're terrible characters. They make no sense. What are they? Who are they? What? Why have they got music? Why have they got weird trons? None of it makes any sense. They all speak in cliches. They're all apparently here for some reason, but none of it makes any sense. They're boring as characters. Oh God, get. Ship them all away, ASAP. This is crap. I never thought we could get lower than the days of Lana and Tamina. But we're approaching those levels again. My God, this is so fucking dull. I don't care. Charlotte's the champion. She's not even here.
Ugh. I mean, she was out at ringside.
Was she? I forgot.
Yep. It's not a good sign.
Charlotte's the women's champion. And it's just... Oh, it's so bad. And it's like, they're like... Diet absolution. Do you know what I mean? Ugh.
So, I still love Ruby Riott, and I always will, because I think she is a fantastic performer and is incredibly talented. The story, you're right, doesn't make any sense. I think having Becky face Ruby Riott did make some logical sense, because the Riott Squad were the ones that attacked Becky Lynch and put her out of action so that she could go film a movie with The Miz, right? And so they called back to that. They said, hey, the Riott Squad took her out, they injured her, and so now she wants retribution against Ruby Riott and the Riott Squad for attacking her. That is a logical story that makes sense. I was excited to see the match. I don't think the match was super exciting. Like, Becky Lynch versus Ruby Riott is a match that could absolutely tear the house down. Absolutely could. If it were the main event of a pay-per-view or something like that, and it were built with a great story and lots of emotion going into it, that match should absolutely rock. The match was good. It wasn't as good as it could have been under other circumstances, like the Riott Squad not being terrible as a concept. But the match was good. I think it was probably the best match on the show. But it's... I mean, you're right. There's not a lot going on with the Riott Squad. I don't understand why they're together. I don't understand who they are. We haven't really learned anything about Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan, other than Sarah Logan can't really speak and is from the South, and Liv Morgan looks like she wants to cosplay as Alexa Bliss. it's all very frustrating because there's so much, and I say this every week and I just will continue to say it until they stop being stupid. There is so much talent in the women's division and there are so many possibilities for great matchups and great stories to be told, and they're not doing anything with them. They're just an exercise in frustration because they brought Becky Lynch back and tried to make it feel like a thing, but everything's just mired in this whole Riot Squad versus everyone, I guess, sort of thing, which doesn't make any sense, and it makes me so sad. Becky Lynch got the win, too, and which is great for Becky Lynch. It's really nice to see her win, but like, where does that leave the Riot Squad? I think that's part of the problem, is that the Riot Squad came in and wanted to be this dominant force and beat people up and, you know, be awesome, but then they weren't awesome at all. They lose half the time. So they're not the most effective heel stable. Like there's not even anything going on. It's just all 50-50. And it just makes me sad.
It's bad. It's really bad. And nobody as a character has really got anything going on. It's not really clear what Indy's motivation is. It's just multi-women matches every week or women from stables facing each other, but the stables aren't over or make any sense.
Yeah, so, no, it's a problem. I mean, Scott Robertson got in touch on Twitter the other day and said, you know, after listening to last week's SmackDown summary, he mentioned, I don't know if they do or not, but should the WWE hire female writers for the women's division? I don't know if they already do, but would love that idea because the women's division is dire. Yeah, they should hire women. Mm-hmm. They absolutely should hire women for the women's division. Like, I mean, they should hire women writers just in general, but it seems like the women's division is just, you know, oh, we're all in teams and we hate each other. Like, no, that's not a compelling story. And also in this match, it didn't really make a lot of sense either because you had Charlotte get a full entrance for the match. You had Naomi get a full entrance for the match, right? And then obviously Becky because she's competing. And then the Riot Squad comes out. So you have Charlotte and Naomi on the outside. And you have the Riot Squad on the outside. Why were Charlotte and Naomi even there?
No idea.
Because they didn't get involved. And it's kind of nice to see the match not have shenanigans. But this is one that I almost would have preferred some sort of DQ ending or shenanigans to happen so that we can save Becky Lynch versus Ruby Riott as a bigger match down the road. Because like I said, that's a match that could be super, super good under another circumstance. But now it's like, oh, so we've just seen Becky submit Ruby Riott, and so that's done now. So, yay.
I mean, again, it's that thing, is that we're entering the sort of rumble to WrestleMania season where, you know, everybody wants to be on WrestleMania. And this women's division in its current state doesn't have a chance. Like,
no.
And
they have a chance of just having, like, a five-way or something. Which is so frustrating because that will just be the same thing again. It'll just be another multi-woman match that'll probably get bumped to the pre-show.
And the thing is, like, I wouldn't even... It probably should be on the pre-show, given the story. But I wish they would come up with better stories. I mean, I don't know, maybe like Ryan, it's funny, because there was a female writer called Jennifer Bloodsworth, I think her name was, and she used to work there a couple of years ago. I think she worked on the women's season of NXT, actually. But anyway, and then there was Tom Castiello, who was the guy who was behind the whole Women's Revolution stuff, and then Ryan Ward was writing NXT when all the kind of Bayley and Sasha stuff was going on, so I know Ryan Ward's still there, so maybe let Ryan Ward write some women's storylines again for a while until they do actually bring in some women.
And it seems like, I don't know if this is true or not, this is just speculation, but it almost seems like different writers are handling it different weeks because there doesn't seem to be a lot of consistency other than we are in teams and only do multi-women matches.
Well, that's one of the reasons that Chris Jericho
The match
works.
On this show, it was nice to see, you know, it was nice to see a singles match on this show. I will give it that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess, you know, Chris Jericho used to work with Jimmy Jacobs every week, and his character was really good because it was consistent, so at least same writers would be something. I watched the full Fashion Files this week on WWE.com, and to be honest, the full 3-minute Fashion Files was better than anything on this show.
Yep, so, it sure was. The training montage,
yep. Who's the one with long hair? Connor?
Victor
doing push-ups with, you know, Tyler Breeze lying on his legs taking selfies. Yeah, the whole thing was just great. So if you've not seen it, go to WWE.com, check it out. And
it's a shame that they're not putting these on the episodes of SmackDown anymore, because they are really, really good. They only just showed the tiny little clips, but they missed out the whole training montage.
Which was the crux of the episode, really.
Yeah, exactly.
So we get the Bludgeon Brothers versus the Ascension, and the Bludgeon Brothers beat them in pretty quick fashion when they do the double powerbomb finish to Victor.
The portion of the fashion files that they showed on SmackDown basically said that the Ascension was like, no, no, we feel like we're ready for the Bludgeon Brothers because they've just done this training montage, right, with Breezango. And they're like, especially with our best friends in our corner, because the best friends aspect of Breezango and the Ascension has been kind of solidified. You know, now that the Ascension saved Breezango a few times, they're like, no, you guys are all right, because you kind of saved us from the Bludgeon Brothers. And they're sort of coming around to the fact that they were forced to sign this best friends contract a few weeks back. But Breezango, Kenny, was not at ringside for the Ascension because they found out that they had to face Rusev Day, so they couldn't be in the corner of the Ascension and risk, you know, permanent harm before their match. But they were like, no, but you guys got this. You're going to win. You're going to do great. They did not win. They did not do great. They got bludgeoned to death.
By brothers.
By brothers. Yes. Of course. So, I mean, we assume. We don't know.
The Bludgeon Brothers got a big win, and the Ascension, and then they did the double powerbomb to Connor after the match as well. So I guess the Bludgeon Brothers are maybe being groomed for a title shot or something at some point.
I thought it was really cute how Connor was so hesitant to go in and help Victor because he clearly wanted to help him, but he also didn't want to get bludgeoned. And then, so as soon as he thought the Bludgeon Brothers were gone, he went to help Victor, and then they double powerbombed him.
Friendship isn't dead.
It's not. It's not at all. And I really, I like seeing the Bludgeon Brothers look so dominant. I think it's actually really clever what they're doing, because Breezango and the Ascension are clearly not going to be top-level tag teams, as much as I love them and they totally win my heart. But they're not going to be top-level tag teams at this point. But it's kind of it's good that they're using a story to not only get over the Bludgeon Brothers as dominant, but also give Breezango and the Ascension time to be on television and be important characters as well.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's not going to hurt or help the Ascension in any way to beat the Bludgeon Brothers, whereas it would hurt the Bludgeon Brothers to not beat the Ascension, so mm-hmm. It made sense. I like it, and, you know, the Ascension, Breezango, just let them do vignettes forever. Just let them do it. Bobby Roode comes out to be on commentary for Zack Ryder and Mojo Rawley, the final first-round match in the US title tournament. Mojo,
except he wasn't even on commentary, he just sat in the chair.
I mean, I'm kind of glad, you know. What was he going to do? See how many times he could say glorious in a 5-minute span?
Yeah, probably. But again, this was another situation where he got a full entrance. Zack Ryder didn't get a full entrance, and he was in the fucking match.
Yeah, they love giving entrances to people who are going to be at ringside. What a weird, weird thing. Mojo's actually been cutting some really good promos on Twitter again, so if you... he's worth checking out on Twitter because he's been doing some really good stuff. He beat Zack in about 5 minutes. I think we all knew Zack Ryder was not going to get the win here. And it led to a stare down between Bobby Roode and Mojo Rawley.
I thought they were going to make out for a second.
Imagine being in Sondra's head, folks. Mojo and Bobby Roode, fair enough. That'll be the next match in the tournament. We got a backstage promo from Jinder with the Singh brothers talking about how he's going to beat Xavier Woods after he was their 184-day WWE champion. So Mojo and Bobby Roode, and then Jinder and Xavier. How are you feeling about those as the semi-final brackets for the US title?
I feel good about it. I mean, Mojo Rawley was definitely my pick to win this. It makes the most sense that Mojo Rawley would win, and I think their match was fine. I didn't watch their match from whatever pay-per-view it was that they had the match. Was it Clash of Champions?
Yes.
Because
yes,
I didn't get a chance to watch the pre-show, and I didn't go back and rewatch it, but I heard that the match was essentially the exact same as what they did at Clash of Champions, which, I mean, I guess is fine, but kind of maybe shows... Well, we know that Mojo Rawley is limited. We know that to be true. But I am still really into angry, super angry Mojo Rawley. I mean, he was, like, yelling at Zack Ryder and just punching him to death and all that kind of stuff, which I think is good. I think angry Mojo Rawley sort of harnessing his spazziness is good. Like, he's managing to do it well. So I'm into that, and he has been cutting really good promos on social media. Again, I wish they would show those promos on the show instead of giving Bobby Roode an entrance for a match he has no part in, but I digress. But yeah, and Jinder Mahal's promo was also pretty good. you know, say, it did make me laugh. I just was like, oh, honey, when Jinder said that the New Day are a fad, but the modern day Maharaja is forever. It's like the New Day have been a fad for quite a while then, because, I mean, even just one of their championship reigns was over a year, like a year and a half. So bless your heart, Jinder. Bless
now, are you, I feel like I need to tell you this again and again so that you don't get disappointed. You do know how this is all going to end up, right? You know, as soon as whoever wins this and wins the US title, Dolph Ziggler will return with the title. You do know this.
Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting about Dolph Ziggler, and it's so lovely.
I know, but I feel like if you keep forgetting about him and then he turns up, you'll be so much more disappointed. Whereas no, if I just keep being that
you're being a good friend by reminding me, it's true. But, you know, for now, I just want to live in ignorant bliss and think that maybe he's actually gone. I know he's not actually gone. I know he's going to come back and try to ruin my life.
Bobby Roode, U.S. champion, versus Dolph Ziggler, U.S. champion, in the battle of the U.S. champions?
Oh, boy, do I not want to see that. Oh, boy, do I not want to see that at all.
Do you know what, Jinder Mahal will win me over forever if Dolph comes out after Jinder's won. He's like, you again? That would win me over. If Jinder did that, all is forgiven.
Seriously, I want Jinder Mahal to win. I want him to be the U.S. champion, and I want Dolph Ziggler to come back, and I just want Jinder to squash him and then throw him into the sun.
That is your Christmas, New Year, birthday wish. So up next, we got Gable and Benjamin coming out. They're angry, but last week, Chad Gable has an adorable Justice for the Free the Tag Titles t-shirt on. Mm-hmm. They talk about, you know, last week and being screwed by the referee call and referees stealing their titles and, you know, they lost to Instant Replay. They want justice. And then Daniel Bryan comes out. He says he understands, you know, thinking that you've won, but, you know, they didn't. It was the referee saw the footage, reversed the decision. If it was the right thing to do, they stand by him. They pinned the wrong Uso. And then Gable kind of has a go at Daniel Bryan, being like, you know, are you just taking it on us because your boss doesn't like you? And they start talking about how you feel. And in the end, their tactics kind of worked because Bryan said that they're going to get a rematch against the Usos at the Royal Rumble in a 2-3 falls match, which should be great.
I'm so looking forward to that.
Yeah, it should be really good. How did you think that? I thought the segment was really good. I thought Gable and Benjamin showed some good personality, and the 2-3 falls match at Rumble could be the match of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is great stuff because finally Chad Gable is getting to show some personality, which he's totally capable of doing, but hasn't really gotten much of a chance to do, I would say, on the main roster. Like, ever since he and Jason Jordan came up, they really haven't gotten much of a chance to show that much personality. So it's really nice to see him being kind of like dickhead jock Chad Gable, who is upset about the Instant Replay decision and all of that, because, I mean, they did legitimately lose. And they keep saying you pinned the wrong Uso, but wasn't Shelton Benjamin also not legal?
Yes.
So, it's like, there was nothing about the situation that was legal. And so, you know, and talking about the referee's decision stands, then yeah, the referee's decision stands, but if the referee decides to reverse that decision, that also stands, right? So Daniel Bryan's completely in the right here to say, no, you did lose the match last week because the referee made that decision, and that's, you know, the way things are going. But obviously Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin are not going to feel that way. And I think they came across really well in terms of explaining their side of the story and, you know, just kind of acting like spoiled, entitled, whiny kids who didn't get their way and are claiming that they demand justice and everything, right? I think this was great, and it's funny because Daniel Bryan is making all of these impetuous decisions, which, I mean, we'll get to with the Bryan and Sheen segment, but this impetuous decision, I'm a big fan of. I don't care if it doesn't make sense. This is one of those instances where I'm like, yeah, I mean, they lost, but they did kind of hang with the Usos and prove that they could beat them under some circumstance, because it was really close. You know, they did pin an Uso, and it's just, you know, the legal man didn't pin the legal man, but an Uso was pinned by one of Benjamin and Gable. So they've proven that they could. And so, yeah, I want to see them fight again. I absolutely want to see them have another match. And, you know, them saying, oh, what do we have to do? Beat them twice in one night? And Daniel Bryan going, yep, that sounds like a great idea to me. It sounds like a great idea to me, too, because that match is going to be fucking amazing, and I can't wait for it.
It should be really fun. It should be a good part of the Rumble. I'm looking forward to this more than I'm looking forward to the WWE title match, if I'm honest. But
yeah, me too.
AJ walks up to Randy Orton backstage and says, you know, are we on the same page about Kevin and Sammy? Orton agrees, and then AJ said, good talk. And then Orton kind of holds him back and says, you know, but after tonight, you know, I'm going to win the Royal Rumble, and I don't care who's holding the title come WrestleMania. And Nakamura then walks up.
Oh, you're so funny, Randy Orton. Boo, you and your hair.
Imagine if he wins.
Even imagine.
Nakamura walks up and said, not so fast, and he just taps the WWE title and stares at both of them and says, good talk, and walks away. I really hope Nakamura's the one that wins. But
Nakamura is giving the too sweet to the belt and just saying good talk was great. I like dorky Shinsuke Nakamura a lot more than I like just regular wrestler badass. The artist, the rock star. Fuck off. Let him just be a dork. He seems like he's a dork. I really like that about him.
But now, given that you've caught up in Retro Raw, see, whenever they say the artist, do you not expect Goldust to turn up with a ball gag?
Yes.
And that's the beauty of Retro Raw.
Or
dressed as Sable.
Or dressed as Sable, like he did this week.
So good. So I do like the idea that they're kind of teasing, because with AJ, it's like, well, Orton and Nakamura are two of the biggest people that could win the Rumble from SmackDown. So, you know, they're both kind of letting them know that they've got their eyes on the prize. Makes sense. So I guess we'll see where it goes. I do like as well when people who are in the Rumble actually remind us that they want to win it and why. It's also a good thing.
Yeah, that's helpful.
I mean, John Cena's in the Rumble. Cool. He's not turned up once to tell us why he wants to win it.
John Cena can't be bothered to show up for a pre-show on a pay-per-view that he's on. Do you really think he's going to show up to tell us any sort of character motivation?
Do you know who showed up more before? The Rock used to do more stuff when he came back.
Yeah. Brock Lesnar's been showing up lately.
Yeah. So come on, Cena. Pick up the pace.
I'm starting to come around to the Finlay Martin school of feeling about John Cena.
Rusev Day is alive and well, thank God, though. And Aiden English is singing about them winning the Rusev Rumble on Rusev Day. And then Breezango came out, so we got Breezango.
I love that he almost said Royal Rumble, and then Rusev had to be like, no, 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 and whisper in his ear, and then he was like, Rusev Rumble.
That's why they're perfect for each other.
They're a delight. They're an absolute delight.
So we get Breezango versus Rusev Day in the battle for Sondra's heart. And in the end, Fandango ends up rolling up Rusev, get the surprise win. Breezango beat Rusev Day. What did you think?
I was shocked. I was really shocked. I don't super understand it because, I mean, in my opinion, Rusev Day should just be pushed to the moon and win all of the things ever. But I also love Breezango, and it's nice to see them get a win and be an actual tag team that you believe could wrestle another tag team in the division. Because at this point, we've just seen them be squashed by the Bludgeon Brothers constantly, right? And I know the Bludgeon Brothers are kind of a force unto themselves. They're big and bludgeony and right? Like, the Bludgeon Brothers sort of exist outside of the tag division because they're just waiting for their moment to strike, it kind of seems like. It was surprising. It didn't really bother me in terms of, I don't think that this is going to hurt Rusev Day at all. I think it does help Breezango be more of a legitimate team in the division. Not that they're going to become the champions or anything. I mean, that would be amazing, but they don't need to be, and they're a lower card tag team. But it was nice to see them get a win, though, and I think it'll be interesting to hear what the Ascension has to say about it. I'm curious if the Ascension's going to be like, you know, okay, so we forgive you for not helping us out because it did lead to you getting a win, or are they going to be upset that Breezango didn't save them from the Bludgeon Brothers? I don't know. And I'm curious to see. And I wish that they would actually air that stuff on SmackDown instead of making me go to YouTube for it. Because it's the most interesting part of the show for me.
Yeah, I mean, the Fashion Files is always the best part of the show.
I don't know. How did you feel about it? Because, I mean, obviously, we're big Rusev Day fans here. Like, mm-hmm. Big Rusev Day fans. And it seems like they have so much crowd momentum behind them right now that they could really be a huge act, like huge. Do you think this is like stopping their momentum, or do you think it's just kind of a blip and it's not really going to matter?
I don't think it's really going to matter. I think that we're in this weird place where you're building towards the Rumble and then they're not in the title picture, so what do you do with them? But I think the real test of Rusev Day and how far they go will be post-Royal Rumble, although what I will say is that whoever they have in mind to win the Royal Rumble, if it is going to be like Roman Reigns or Randy Orton, one of those two, which are the picks that most people do not want to see, do not put Rusev anywhere near it, because it will... I mean, I'm weirdly fascinated and excited by the prospect of the Royal Rumble, because it is in Philadelphia, and just to see how people are going to react to stuff. But I think this is maybe the first Royal Rumble in a long time where you can't call the winner, and I like that. It's good that you can't call it.
Yeah, you really can't, and it seems like you could call a handful of winners from each show, but I don't even know if Raw or SmackDown is going to have the winner of the Royal Rumble.
What does that mean?
Well, just,
you mean like, you mean as in like, it could be multiple people from both?
Yeah. Because like, it could be Shinsuke Nakamura, it could be, I mean, I don't think it would be Randy Orton because he won it last year, and cannot boo hard enough for that idea. but it'll just be interesting because they could set up Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar without having Roman win the Rumble, right? They could have...
Well, because Raw has the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view.
Exactly. So it seems like maybe someone from SmackDown would win it, which would lead me to believe that, I mean, Shinsuke Nakamura or Randy Orton would be the logical choices, unless they swerve us and have Rusev win the Royal Rumble or something, which would be fucking amazing. I don't think it's going to happen, but wouldn't that be really cool if it did?
I mean, there's other stuff, like, you know, Finn Balor could win the Rumble and then choose AJ Styles as his opponent. There's like...
Oh, yeah. Like, I guess they could cross brands. Have they established whether that's allowed or not?
They've never said, but I remember in 2007 when Undertaker won the Rumble, and they did a thing like 2 weeks later where they had, I think Cena was the Raw champion, Batista was the SmackDown champion, and Lashley was the ECW champion, and they did this segment where all three champions were in the ring and Taker came out to choose his opponent, and it was him and Batista, so you could do that, I guess. I mean, that'd be quite interesting to, you know, who is he going to face? I like the unpredictability of it, so that's good.
I'm staying so far away from rumors this year. Like,
I'm not going to be contactable for like 24 hours before the Rumble. I'm just going to stay off the internet completely. So Breezango get the win over Rusev Day. Then we get Shane and Brian backstage again, and Shane's kind of talking about, you know, all of Brian's decision making recently about Owens and Zayn being the main event, and you know, Gable and Benjamin getting this other title shot when, you know, like you were saying earlier on, Benjamin also wasn't the legal guy, so there was kind of an impetus that they actually didn't win properly. So Shane's kind of going on that front, but he's also being that sort of new, annoying Shane McMahon delivery about it. And then Brian comes back at him and is a bit sassy towards him, saying, you know, because Shane says, you know, you're acting a bit unstable, and Brian says, I could say the same for you, given your genetic makeup. And they kind of have a back and forth, and then they agree to disagree. So it's continuing to leave this little bubbling tension, which, where is it going?
I don't know. And I think I liked it better when Daniel Bryan was just the good guy, because then at least his motivations made sense to me. And I guess they still sort of do, because I feel like Shane has gotten under Bryan's skin, and now he does kind of want to do things just to aggravate Shane a little bit. But it's not helping the situation, and it's just making everyone unlikable. Like, I don't like anyone in this story very much. I still like Daniel Bryan best, because he is the best, right? And he's actually giving me at least one match that I want to see. The handicap match still doesn't make a lot of sense unless you go with the idea that I presented last week, where he doesn't want Kevin Owens to be able to pin Sami Zayn or vice versa so that they can become co-champion. Mm-hmm. And he wants AJ Styles to actually have to be pinned to lose the belt. So if you go with that logic, then Daniel Bryan makes a little bit more sense in terms of the handicap match, but they're not telling that story. That's just what I'm making up in my head, because they haven't bothered to make sense of it, right? Which is frustrating. But I don't know. Daniel doesn't really seem to be on the side of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. He just seems to be doing what he does. And then Shane McMahon coming and being like, you seem so unstable. Like, Shane McMahon, especially, we'll get to it later in the show, but Shane McMahon is the one who is making all of these decisions just to screw over Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Like, that is his only motivation. He can't say that he cares about anything else on the show, because, like, Daniel Bryan was the one who came out to talk to Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin, which I liked, by the way. I didn't mention that. I like that Daniel Bryan is showing interest in another aspect of the show. It's not just the authority figures and Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens and by periphery AJ Styles. It's, you know, they do still have a show to run. So I liked that aspect of the Gable and Benjamin promo as well. But I don't see an out for this. I don't see where it's going. And if I were enjoying the back and forth, and if I were enjoying the story as it is in the moment, then I'd be like, okay, yeah, like I want to wait and see how this plays out. But I'm not enjoying all the bickering. It's just, it's boring, and it's just more authority figure bullshit, which is not my favorite. I mean, you have more of a tolerance for McMahon family drama than I do, and my limit has been reached.
Yeah, no, it's difficult. I think the problem for me is that I think that Shane can be a really good character, but I think that they're just not... They're exposing a lot of his weaknesses this time around rather than what they did last year. You know, last year at WrestleMania, he kind of was... The story was good. You know, AJ mm-hmm. AJ Styles and him, it was a pretty good story. They had a good match, but I guess we'll see where it all leads.
I hope it leads somewhere.
I mean, the thing is, it has to. I mean, it's the plus point I would give is at least it is a long-term story. It does go back to... When did this start? Maybe September?
It would have to be before then, because it would have to be...
SummerSlam was the referee thing.
Yeah.
So maybe just before SummerSlam? So I like they've got a long-term story, but they should have a good ending plan to it. But they're kind of in this... They're in the weird kind of how do we keep this going phase, which is always a struggle. You should really have.
And it's just, even a few weeks ago, I said it was one of the best written stories, whether... And maybe part of the problem is that there isn't a clear heel-face dynamic, and as wrestling fans, we're looking for someone to be the heel and to be the babyface, right? And so we're like, ooh, is Shane going to be the heel, or is Daniel Bryan going to be the heel? It could be that neither one of them is a heel or a babyface. They're all just terrible people.
Welcome to WWE. Main event time is Randy Orton, AJ Styles, and Nakamura against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn ends up getting disqualified by... Kevin Owens brings the chair in and gets him and Sami disqualified by hitting him in the gut. But then Shane comes out to restart the match, makes it no DQ.
That was after the count-out thing, though. Because first they try to get themselves counted out.
Yeah, and so then Shane comes out. The count-out. Yeah, so I couldn't remember if it was the count-out first or the no DQ first, yeah.
Yeah, it was the count-out first and then the DQ thing.
So both of them get, you know, now it's no holds barred, anything goes. AJ wears out Kevin Owens with a chair, and then in the end, Randy Orton hits an RKO onto Zayn, I think it was. I think it was Sami Zayn?
I think so. I can't remember exactly. I was pretty tuned out by the end.
So Orton, Nakamura, and AJ get the win. The babyfaces close the show victorious, and we're no further forward than where any of this is. Where do we go from here, Sandra?
Anywhere. Anywhere would be nice. It baffles me that they seem to think that Shane McMahon is still a babyface and that they're presenting him as a babyface, because they're still presenting him as a babyface, right? Like, he's doing all of these dastardly things against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, who are the heeliest of heely heels. They are terrible people and they're super annoying and they're doing, you know, nothing to really be liked or lauded. I mean, they are being intentionally annoying, which is great. I love it. Like, smarmy, dorky Sami Zayn just going, yep, you can tell he is having so much fun with this, but they're dicks. They're absolute dicks. And so Shane McMahon coming out to mess with them, though, makes Shane McMahon a dick too. And, you know, you can't present to me a babyface authority figure who gets mad that he's, you know, implied to be like his father. You know, last week, was it last week that Daniel Bryan said, I don't want you to turn into your father, or maybe a couple weeks ago, whenever he said the line about, I don't want Shane O'Mac turning into Mr. McMahon, and Shane McMahon kind of took umbrage and was like, you know, well, my dad's done a lot of great things, but I'm not like him, and blah, blah, blah. You're exactly like him, though. Like, Shane McMahon coming out to restart the match under various conditions, that's a heel thing to do. That's not a babyface general manager or commissioner or whatever thing to do. It doesn't matter if it's heels or faces that you're messing with, that's still a dick move. Because, yeah, Kevin and Sammy getting a count out, that's, you know, it's not great, but they still look too sympathetic because it is 3-on-2 and they are being ganged up on. So, okay, so they want to take a count out loss instead of suffering further damage. You can kind of understand that. And so for Shane to make it no count out so that they have to get back in the ring, okay, fine. Like, I guess you're trying to have them not take the coward's way out. I guess I can understand that. I don't agree with it because I don't agree with Shane McMahon's impetuous decisions or, you know, his hostility toward Kevin and Sammy. I feel like he should be a little bit more professional than them if he's going to be the babyface authority figure. Mm-hmm. But then to restart it again under no DQ rules just to make the odds even worse for Kevin and Sammy after they're already in a handicap match, plus he's against them, so it's really kind of almost 4-on-2 at that point. It really makes Kevin and Sammy look too sympathetic, so even though they're being absolute dicks, they're the ones that I'm like, I kind of want them to fight from underneath and win, which shouldn't be the reaction that I'm having to two heels in a main event of SmackDown. It's just none of it makes sense, and it's very frustrating.
It's not the best. And like you said, the only nice guy out of all of it seems to be AJ Styles, who is kind of sucked
into the least
into
important
it.
Person in his own championship story.
Yeah, I mean, the secondary story seems to be that Nakamura and Orton want to face AJ for the title. And that's the secondary story to Sammy, Kevin, Shane, and Brian.
Yeah.
Where would your thumb be for this episode of SmackDown?
I would say, because I did actually quite enjoy some of the stuff on the episode. Like, I liked Ruby Riott versus Becky Lynch a lot more than you did, just as a match in a vacuum, because it was a match I wanted to see. I think I'll go thumbs in the middle, because all, like, the opening and closing stuff is just an exercise in frustration. But I liked Mojo Rawley and Zack Ryder fine. The Bludgeon Brothers continued to be awesome. Rusev Day versus Breezango was, like you said, battle for my heart. That was just by everything. I absolutely loved it. So there was some good stuff on the show, and it went quickly, except for the main event stuff. I'm so tuned out of it.
Yeah, the main event stuff wasn't great this week. I'm a thumbs in the middle as well. I hated all the women's stuff, and the main event storylines give me a headache, but I did love Breezango and Rusev Day and the Gable Benjamin stuff was really good. So yeah, overall, good stuff, bad stuff, but thumbs in the middle. But Sondra, let's talk about the real tragedy here. They're fucking changing the taste of Iron Brew.
They are, which, you know, it's funny. Everyone says that you must be raging, but you don't even drink regular Iron Brew anyway. You drink sugar-free, so it doesn't affect you. Who does this affect? Me, when I come over to Scotland and look forward to obviously seeing you, but also getting to drink Iron Brew.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I feel bad. Like, somebody on Facebook actually, so people keep asking, you know, how do you feel about the change in taste of Iron Brew? So I drink the diet stuff just out of, you know, necessity to not get fat. And I was speaking to someone about it, and so the question I was asking is, you know, how, because a lot of Iron Brew have publicly said that 9 out of 10 people said that it was an excellent or very good taste replacement. But really, this is what I think is the right call. All these taste tests today for the new lower sugar Iron Brew are a bit presumptuous. The real test comes when you've just come off the sesh, you've got a boggin' hangover, and you're sitting with a roll of whatever you can afford, bacon sausage, from your change the night before, and an ice cold can of brew. Only then will the true taste test be viable.
I mean, that stands to reason.
Iron Brew
is
the hangover cure. Yeah. So Iron Brew is the hangover cure, so
It is, and I'm down to my last bottle that I have at home, so I really need to get more, and it's, like, super expensive to have it shipped here, so I need to, like, just break down and buy some, because I made this 12-pack that I got last from, I think, August to now, and I'm pretty proud of myself.
Wow.
But I don't want to be without it, because what if I am really hungover one day, and all I want, all I crave in the world is a bottle of Iron Brew? Is it going to be the same? I don't know. I'm actually really nervous about this. Although it does make me laugh that in the Iron Brew statement, when they were talking about it, they were like, don't worry, it still has like 4 teaspoons of sugar. It's still unhealthy. It's still great.
Although some people are claiming that they think it's all a marketing ploy, and it's all kind of like a new Coke thing. So in a year, they'll just bring back the regular Iron Brew. Like
wasn't that about a soft drink tax?
Yeah, but people were like, we'll pay the tax!
I'm just curious to try it, because, I mean, even the sugar-free stuff, it's not bad. Like, I do like it, I just don't like it as much.
Mm-hmm. See, I because I've done the diet stuff for so long, because obviously the main one would just be, I mean, I drink like the equivalent of 5 cans of Diet Iron Brew a day.
Right.
So if I was to do that in regular cans, I'd be the size of a house. I will probably get on set diabetes.
I know that you are anti-Iron Brew Extra.
Uh-huh.
I'm curious to try Iron Brew Extra. I need to try that next time I'm over, because I'm curious. Isn't that the equivalent of Coke Zero?
But the thing is, I think a lot of people who drink Diet Coke like Coke Zero, and a lot of people who drink Coke like Coke Zero. But mm-hmm. with Iron Brew Extra, people who love Iron Brew just seem to keep drinking Iron Brew, and people who like Diet seem to keep drinking Diet. So Extra doesn't really seem to have had the same result as Coke did. But I'll bring you over some Iron Brew Extra for New Orleans.
Okay, excellent. Because I prefer Coke Zero hands down to Diet Coke, because I don't like the aspartame flavor, which is what worries me about the change in the flavor of Iron Brew, because they said that there was going to be saccharin in it, and I really don't like the taste of saccharin at all, so it worries me.
It's a concern that we're all gonna have to be at it. So they change the fucking taste of Diet, I'll have a picket line at their fucking office tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you change the taste of my one love. So that's it for us this week. I'm not going to be on the SmackDown Summary next week, because I'm going to be on tour with Shawn Michaels, so it'll be Sondra and David next week talking to you about SmackDown. My God, David talking about SmackDown, that should be fun.
Oh boy, that's going to be interesting.
At least you don't have to try and talk to them about Nikki Bella.
I was going to say, at least the Bellas aren't around. The Bellas are coming back for Raw 25, though. I saw that they were in the list of legends.
They are, and I love the outrage of people going, the Bellas are legends?
I think it's funny.
I agree with the anger that people have. But you got to take it with a pinch of salt. They don't really mean that the Bellas are legends. Come on.
No, they just mean that they're not wrestling right now, and they're appearing in a non-wrestling capacity.
Exactly.
Because they're still a part of WWE programming. Like, they're still on Total Divas, which cracks me up when you watch Total Divas now, because it seems like they're trying to shoehorn the Bellas into all the storylines, but they're not on tour with wrestling, because they're not wrestling right now. So you have to go to a farm with the Bellas, or go skateboarding with the Bellas as this completely nonsensical story.
God, good times. So Sondra, where can people find you on Twitter if they want to say hi?
Find me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And for loads of bonus content, retro pay-per-views, current pay-per-views, lots of other stuff, Power Slam podcast today early, the Power Slam overrun, all sorts of good content over at Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes.
And I do now have the Power Slam overrun from 2 weeks ago, so I'll post that tonight. There are very, very limited general admission tickets left for Shawn Michaels in London, Manchester, and Belfast. So insidetheropes.co.uk is where you go for those tickets. And there's also had a hack on our social media pages. I don't really know what it means. All I know is it's save_us.aia. I don't really know what that means, but we're trying to fix the server so it won't happen again. And also people keep asking me about the big announcement that I said we were going to have, and I'm very, very happy after a lot of stress and potential onset heart attacks that the big announcement is able to go ahead very, very soon. And Sondra, people are going to be happy, aren't they?
I think people are going to be happy. I'm happy. I'm very happy.
We will reveal that as soon as we possibly can. You will know everything by the Royal Rumble.
It will all become clear.
So thanks for listening, everybody. Sondra, what song should play us out this week?
No one from the main event, because I'm mad at all of them. Let's play Becky Lynch's theme, because she's back.
She's back. She was filming a movie with The Miz and Shawn Michaels, but now she's back on SmackDown. I bet you she still wishes she was in London chatting to them. But she's back. Here's Becky Lynch. Bye.
Bye.